I'll bring the Finance Committee to order. Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday, March the 12th. The time is 9:08. Members present, Representative Munoz, Representative Holmes, Representative Guerra, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Costello, Co-Chair Stoltz, Co-Chair Osterman, Representative Wilson, T. Representative Edgerman, Representative Thompson, and Vice Chair Newman. Today we're going to take up and pass out the final versions of our operating budget. And Representative Stoltz, if you would make a motion, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move that committee substitute for House Bill number 266 Finance, that's version 28-GH2671-Y, be moved from committee.
Object.
I'll object for sake of discussion. So, we have it before us. All the amendments that we had yesterday are incorporated in it. Any comments from anybody? Seeing none. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You might have the votes to get this out of committee, but we'll see. There's no sense, and I don't want to rehash everything. We talked about this budget yesterday, and there was one amendment that Representative Guttenberg and I purposely didn't run. We knew we tried our best at convincing folks, and we came out on the short end, so it was not going to succeed, but we want to continue the discussion on this one because there's still time left in the legislative session. This bill gets transmitted to the Senate, comes back to us, and we want the discussion to continue. And that is on the $2 million, roughly, cut to substance abuse treatment funding. We have waiting lists right now for people who are seeking treatment. We have some of the worst alcoholism rates in the nation. Heroin addiction in the state is growing, and people call it the new meth because it's so cheap, and so people are getting hooked on heroin. And I honestly don't know what you do about people who are not willing to seek treatment. And those are not the people that I'm talking about on this. Excuse me. Those are not the people that I am largely talking about on this this issue. There are a lot of people who are willing to seek treatment, who are seeking treatment for severe alcoholism problems that they have, that cause dysfunction in their families, that cause them to not be able to work, that cause them to be a danger to the community. There is a massive shortage of heroin addiction treatment in the state. The main heroin addiction treatment center in Alaska, in Anchorage, by federal law, they have to give a priority to pregnant women. So they haven't taken in a male since March of 2013. And folks who seek heroin addiction treatment just drop off the list because they have to stay on the list every single month and reapply every month. And people with major drug addictions at some point are only willing to seek treatment for a certain amount of time. If a year passes by, it's something close to a miracle for most of those folks to have decided to stay on the list. When they want to be treated is the time that you want to treat them. And by not treating people with heroin addiction, I've said this before, and I feel very strongly about it, by not treating people who have a heroin addiction, they will go out and buy the next day and commit a felony, and their drug dealer will commit a felony, and their drug dealer will become more powerful and more dangerous to the community. And that's the policy we have in the state on heroin addiction, which is sending people out to commit another felony with their drug dealer and making their drug dealer more powerful. We've researched this one. Not a single male has been admitted for a year at the Anchorage Methadone Treatment Clinic. Cutting $2 million from a substance abuse treatment system, I understand the committee's intention. You were trying to meet a budget goal that the majority has decided to meet, and I understand that. But I don't think this is the place to do it, because this is just going to cause more agony, more crime, more domestic violence, more child abuse, more felonies, more jail costs, more prosecutor costs, more public defender costs, more parole officer costs. I'm not one for spending a ton of money pushing drug and alcoholism treatment on people who just aren't willing to be treated. But I am one for extending treatment to those who want to beat their addiction, who want to pull their families back together, who want to get back to work. So we already had waiting lists across the state in many of these facilities, whether it's alcoholism or drug treatment. The waiting lists are going to be longer. And there's one component of this that I just disagree with, as much as I truly respect and like the chair of the Health and Human Services Subcommittee, and I know he worked really hard, I think longer on this subcommittee than most people have worked on a subcommittee. You cannot take $1 million from residential drug and alcoholism treatment and put that into outpatient drug and alcoholism treatment. So on top of the $2 million cut, there's a transfer, and this is why that transfer is not going to work. People who need residential treatment need it because their drug and alcoholism problem is severe, because it cannot be treated by outpatient treatment, because they may need a 3 to 6 month, 24-hour-a-day inpatient treatment setting. And that's been the testimony by the many, many people who testified from the treatment community who know this issue. It's not going to work. You can't spend $3,000 and buy a Ferrari. You can't treat people with very, very significant drug and alcoholism addiction problems that require inpatient treatment and just think that it's going to work if you send them to outpatient treatment. The science doesn't work that way. So I'm troubled with that. I understand the extreme pressure that was on the subcommittee chair to find places to cut and do the least damage possible, and I know that he tried to do that as well as he could. He was given really a tough deal. But I can't support that. The others we talked about, I mean, I think we need to reverse the cuts in our schools, not just stop next year's cuts, but reverse the last 3 years' worth of cuts. And we've said everything else, I think, on the major issues, but we didn't talk about the substance abuse issue, and that's a very important one to me that I hope resonates as this bill crosses over and goes to the Senate and they consider it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vera. Further conversation. Representative Edberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I disagree with my cohort here on my right. We had more than one amendment that we argued about. We had a conversation often on the side, and we talked about the siloing of departments and how they don't work across lines. There's inefficiencies because they don't pick up where another one drops off, and people in programs and situations fall between the gaps. And I think that was very healthy. I think we did a good job of making ourselves aware of that. We can blame them for not working on that, but I think at this point we can look at ourselves also and say that's a good way for us to pick up the ball also. You know, when we talk about one program, you know, our children become our seniors. There's a whole continuum of things through that. We need to make sure they grow up well. The things that we can do, they get educated well. We do what we can to make sure they have the jobs And then when they're seniors, they have other responsibilities that that are significant parts of their lives, and we have responsibilities to them as well. Because at the end of the day, this we are still, regardless of what the budget says, we are still a rich state. We have the oil, we have gas, we still have fish, we have timber mining, and we are the stewards. And in many ways, this committee has a lot of responsibility towards that in framing the future. We are in a compressed schedule now, 90 days instead of 120. It forces us to do things in a different way, and I applauded the Representative Newman for holding year-round hearings on that huge budget, trying to understand that. We have a big responsibility. We need to take it seriously. I'm not saying we don't, but I think we need to look at things that happen when there's a treatment program or there's a that's something that we're looking at, and then we're cutting that, and then the corrections budget is thinking, well, if they're going to cut that, my budget's going to get bigger, you know, or the Attorney General's office, and you know, additional prosecutions, and we should be examining that closer. I mean, there's a lot of social scientists out there that have all kinds of different answers. But for us, it's fiscal situation and how we manage our state. And I think we need to be looking at in a holistic way. One of the moving things that we had here during the public comment period was the addicts and the alcoholics who had gotten through a program. And if I've gone to a couple of graduations for the therapeutic courts, those people have huge thank yous in their smiles that they were allowed to get out of the hole that they had dug in for themselves. And you know, there's no measuring for those smiles and those thank yous and those kids that sat here, those people. And you know, one person came up and I said, no, that person is a former addict or an alcoholic or something. I mean, it was obvious that they had trouble in their lives. But the results of what those people do, the harm that they do for the rest of us, is something that we need to address. We don't want to, but God, we'd prefer not to have those issues in front of us. But we don't set the agenda. It's put on our laps, and we have to deal with it. And I think we started the discussion about dealing with this in a holistic way and moving out of the silos, the way we deal with a lot of the budget issues. I think we need to continue that dialogue and deal with that in ways that will benefit all of us. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Cunningham. Further comments? Representative Costello.
Thank you. I want to thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and the members for all the hard work. We had a lot of tough choices to make, and something that I think about is a kindergartner today in school, by the time they become a sophomore in high school, at the rate of our growth, our budget will be consumed by K-12 and Medicaid. And so I think when we make these tough choices, at least in my mind, I'm thinking about the future, about saving, you know, protecting our savings, and about those kids in school today having the same opportunities that we all have had in our education. And so the bar is set pretty high when you talk about a dollar spent on a program or a dollar spent on a teacher. And I just want to leave the committee with that, you know, thought. And I know we've had a lot of serious choices that we've had to make, and they will continue through the end of session. But I want to thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, for all the work and leadership you provided in this process.
Thank you. Further comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Co-Chair Stoltz.
Just briefly, I'd like to amplify what Representative Costello said. Within a very short period of time, our entire operating budget, everything else held equal, and that would be consumed by Medicaid and education. So we've had a slew of other amendments on Marine Highway, education, labor, All those discussions are off the table if we're only funding that. And it's obviously not a realistic scenario that those only two functions, but very sobering reality. And it's not that many years away. Representative Costello's kids will probably be starting college then, and we're hoping to still have a university system that, if everything is consumed by just K-12 and Medicaid unchecked, we don't have any other options. This is not an enjoyable exercise we've been going through. There's certainly nothing but goodwill in the process. It's as frustrating as it is to the public, they don't understand why we're not just adding another $2 million, not just adding another $5 million. It's not that much money. It's really not much money, and collectively, of how much we're trying to ratchet back. It's almost symbolic that we're trying to stop the growth, and I think it's more than that. It's a big move, but we certainly have constituencies out there that say, why don't we cut a lot deeper? And certainly, a lot of pressure that I think all of us face that. In our districts, why our budgets have gotten so big. This process was painful for folks, as we're looking at continuing unsustainable budgets. This may be looked at nostalgically as the good times. So, and I hope that doesn't mean the speeches get longer, because that's if we can't appropriate this, all you have left to do is talk. But God help us then, maybe. But I'm not trying to be light about that, but it's been just reducing the budget below the governor's level and trying to have something a little bit north of a $50 million overall reduction has been a process that's caused a lot of angst, and here we are. It could very easily, we could be having discussions where we're talking about not horizontal cuts, but vertical cuts, eliminating whole programs that aren't. These might be the good times, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Stoltz, for the discussion. My final concern is just to thank everybody at the table here. I know it's painful, and I've had the opportunity to discuss every one of these budgets with each one of you, and I know how hard it is to make these cuts and try to get the budget under control. Sometimes I think we'll probably be seen as the black side of having to do these kind of things, but on the other side of it is we get elected to come down here and do a job, and with the financial situation that we're in right now, I think that the decisions that are being made here, while painful, are the proper way to start the conversation to get us to where we need to be in the future. And I'd also like to thank the departments. There was a lot of discussion that took place between members of the committee here with the departments to get to where we are today. The departments obviously feel the pain just as much as we do in trying to do their job that they see it as is. And I expect, obviously, this to get harder, but both through the governor and through the departments, the commissioners, we've been able to get to a point today without any drastic cuts to programs. But as the co-chair said a second ago, next year is going to be harder. Next year and the year after that are going to be even harder, trying to figure out how you get more efficient without totally destroying any kind of a program. But I anticipate that that's going to happen, that we're going to have to get into the programs themselves and figure out how to do what's there. Again, thank you, everybody. So with that, I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objections to moving this bill out of committee? Seeing none, House Bill 266, Finance, moves out of committee. Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move that committee substitute for House Bill number 267, Finance Committee, and that's /28-GH2673/O, be moved from committee.
I'll object for sake of discussion. Seeing no discussion, I'll remove my objections. And
we'll just know for the record, Mr. Chairman, this is the mental health budget.
Yes, right. Okay. So 267 moves out of committee. Senator DeBriefides.
House Finance back to order. Take on another aspect of the Finance Committee. That's a bill today, House Bill 306. We have a committee substitute before us. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill number 306, Finance, version backslash R, dated 3/11/14 for committee discussion and referral.
I'll object. We'll have Mr. George and Mr. Anderson go through this, and there is a sectional as well, so members can follow along.
Good morning, members of House Finance. For the record, my name is Daniel George. I served as staff to Representative Stoltz and the House Finance Committee. Before members this morning is CS for House Bill number 306, Finance, version R. This replaces version N. It's dated 3/11/2014. I'll go through the changes briefly. In the title, in the first line, the word tax credits has been removed and replaced with the review. In lines 5 through going on to the second page, first line, each of the tax credits has been spelled out rather than stating certain statutes authorizing indirect expenditures. Section 1 is a new section. It's conforming language pursuant to the repealing of the insurance tax education credit.
I just want to clarify the public watch. When we say repealing, this is really a sunset process, and it's repealed and renewed. It's just for clarification. So please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Section 2 and following sections have been renumbered. The next change occurs in Section 4, which is still on page 3, I believe. The indirect expenditure report has been changed from every year to every 2 years. Sections renumbered throughout. The next change occurs, what was formerly Section 7 and 8 have been removed. These were the minerals exploration tax credit and conforming language. In what is Section 8 in your draft, in R, under indirect expenditure report, the commissioner shall, not later than July 1st, before the first regular session of the legislature, is formally read November 1st. Same section, under item number 7, the estimated annual effect on revenue of the indirect expenditure for the previous 5 fiscal years, excluding the fiscal year immediately preceding the date the report is due. This last portion of the sentence has been added. Under number 9, under section 8, for purposes of this section, federal tax credits adopted under AS 4320-021 shall be reported in the aggregate has been added. Continuing on in the same section, under item number D, the words, what formerly read as, in this section, indirect expenditure means a credit, exemption, deduction, deferral, discount, exclusion, or other differential allowance designed to encourage an activity or benefit to the public or a taxpayer, and has been replaced with, in this section, indirect expenditure means an express provision of state law that results in foregone revenue for the state by providing. What was Section 10 has been removed from the bill. This is conforming to the minerals exploration tax credit. And it has been replaced with the language in Section 8. This is under D 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And sections throughout on the final page have been renumbered. And by reference, the statutes under Section 10 referring to the minerals exploration tax credit have been removed. That is the extent of the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Thompson, would you just, as we've had a few iterations of this bill, why don't you, as folks are watching this, why don't you just reframe your intent and how these...
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate that. I feel like we need to do some clarifications. There's been some misconceptions on House Bill 306 and what it does. this is giving the legislature some fiscal responsibility to look back at indirect expenditures created by tax credits. And this gives a report to the legislature where that they will be able to go back and review to see if the legislative intent of these things were being met, how much money is involved, is it good for Alaska, is it creating jobs or industry, and it's the responsibility of the legislatures to go back and take a look. This report, they will have 2 years to go back and review and make sure that we are doing what we thought we were doing and see if it's good for Alaskans. And during that two-year period, they can renew those and have a sunset after that of 6 years before we have to go back and review it again. A lot of people were under the misconception that suddenly in January 2015 a lot of these are going to go away. They are not. They will be reviewed over the next 2 years, and if they're worthy, they will be renewed. And I think that it's our responsibility to take a look at what we do. As a business person, you have to go back and see if what you're doing is good for your business. And this is for the state to go back and look and see if what we are doing is good for the state of Alaska and its people. So this is I think, very important that we take that fiscal responsibility and review and see what we are doing. And thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
And I'd like to add, anybody that is currently receiving this is obviously concerned, and that's certainly a natural reaction, but it's also our duty to review all expenditures directly. And certainly the University of Alaska has probably been scurrying as much as anybody and doing a lot of the proselytizing on this one, and as a recipient. And, you know, I think they would have been well served to talk to a lot of us directly instead of doing a campaign on trying to kill the bill. As and of all institutions, I think, in which I'm a big supporter, I'm a graduate of the flagship campus, that I think a more constructive role on their part would have been more helpful to the process. So as I've talked to a lot of folks in industry, that they said, well, university said we got to kill this bill because I just don't think that's been a constructive part of the process. And I know President Gamble is listening as he follows us, our every step and move, and his staff. But
Certainly, anybody that's certainly benefiting from a tax credit, which is really a diversion of general funds, is concerned about change, and that's a natural reaction in this building. So, that said, I appreciate that we've been able to spend the time on this bill that we've had, and I appreciate you so succinctly summarizing that it's a review of our fiscal responsibility, and 2 years is an incredibly long period to extend a sunset, and I think there's going to be a rush to as many of these are effective and popular. So just to clarify the record, because there has been a lot of proselytizing on this bill, not all accurate. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. First off, I apologize for asking questions. I had other meetings going on at the time that we've had this bill before the Finance Committee, and I have not heard it other than my conversations with the sponsor. So a couple of clarities, if I can get them. First off, I don't understand the removing the mining or the mineral tax credit out of the series of the rest of the tax credits.
It's not a mineral tax credit, through the chair, Representative Osterman. This is a exploration tax credit, and we felt that anytime you're doing exploration, it is going to possibly create something that is going to bring revenue and jobs to the state. So a exploration tax credit to us was like something that is acceptable. It's something that needs to be gone forward. And so we took the exploration tax credit out of this bill where it would not be involved. And my staff, Brody Anderson, has a possibly better explanation than myself.
If I may, for the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. Through the chair, Representative Osterman, when it came to the discussion about mineral exploration tax credit, when we initially wrote the bill and had talked to people about the, basically all credits trapped in that were dependent on Title 38, the Alaska Public Lands, the large discussion about exploration tax credit, whether it's in oil and gas or in mineral, is the long-term investment that international corporations that decide on when they're looking at exploration. Decisions are made at their headquarters 10 to 7 years out. And so to bring sunsets to the exploration credits, whether it's in oil and gas or in mineral, could stifle exploration incentives to come to Alaska in the first place. And so we felt it was important, if we were going to exclude exploration tax credits in oil and gas, we felt it was important also to exclude the mineral exploration tax credits as well.
Yeah. Mr. Coacher, I understand what you're doing and the reason for doing it. I would make other arguments as far as other resource extraction that we have and the renewable resources that are basically the same, that those companies make decisions based on a 7 to 10 year period. So you don't exclude fisheries, for example, from it, but you leave it in there. And so I would argue that there is a comparison, and that the treatment is different being based upon non-renewable extraction that you're talking about being excluded from having the conversation. In reading the notes of the bill, we're talking somewhere in there $20 million a year in tax credits that we're talking about taking a look at, yet we have $300 to $400 to $500 million worth of credits on the non-renewable extraction that we have out there. So I just wonder about the comparison and why we're treating one industry different than the other industry. My second question deals with Section 10 of the new CS, where we called it a repeal in the bill, but really we're talking about a sunsetting all of these tax credits at one time. And I haven't had an opportunity to talk to Ledge Finance to find out the workload that's involved in the next 2 years to get us to that point where the repealing of every tax credit happens. And does this compound itself in a workload at the end of that period of time that we have all of the tax credits at one time coming up for consideration by the legislature.
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, this is one of the things that we did do some changes with, trying to accommodate Department of Revenue's workloads that they have through the year, and we changed the dates that we originally had, trying to work with them where it would be in a period of time when they would be able to use existing personnel instead of adding new personnel to do these reports. My staff has talked quite extensively with Department of Revenue and Treasury.
Would you provide some clarification on that, Mr. Anderson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Put yourself on the record.
Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson.
Thank you, sir.
So there is a large discussion that has gone on between the time commitment that Department of Revenue will need in order to compile the information and then turning that over to Legislative Finance and then letting them do it on top of their already current workload, getting the budgets ready as they move forward and preparing the documents for us. We've tried to find that balance between by doing a couple things. Number one is we did exclude the preceding fiscal year ending the date of the report. The reason why we removed that is basically we had that November 1st date. That's also the date that actually they create the resource fall resource book for Department of Revenue. So basically when they're actually literally the day that they're supposed to be closing up the books on last year, we were requiring them to have this report. By backing it out 1 year, it gives them the liberty to work on this during their non-crunch times for Department of Revenue. Department of Legislative Finance had spoke that the getting the report on November 1st put them in an extremely hard crunch time because of the fact that that's right when they're preparing the next year's fiscal budget. So that's why we tried to push it back to November 1 or July 1st for the reporting of Department of Revenue. So then Legislative Finance will have time in their off time to do their review. So then their commitments to current fiscal year production and the documents wouldn't be hampered as well. So we've tried to find that balance.
One final comment or question would be, is the reporting back to the legislature through Legislative Finance or through the Department of Revenue, and what area are we working with it in the end when we repeal all of these?
The Department of Revenue would make this report and give it to Leg Finance, Treasury Department, and they would take all these compiled numbers and put them into a report for the legislature.
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, report will be Leg Finance would get the same time, would get the report at the same time as the Department of Revenue's report at the same time on July 1st, but it would actually go to the legislature. They have to give it to leadership, but they have to report it to there. And then, once again, Leg Finances would present their report on the first day of session to the leadership, to the legislature.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Good.
Representative Holmes, Munoz, and then Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think that this is a good exercise to be looking at what we're doing. I guess the one part, and I sort of touched on this the other day, I just want to reiterate it, especially now that the sponsor's here. The part that concerns me is sort of the inequality that the Section 10 repeal sunset provisions only apply to certain subsets. And then 2 years later, we'll have another round of reports, and 2 years after that, we'll have another round of reports, but there are no sunsets attached to that. So I sort of feel like, first of all, we're treating the tax credits differently depending on which year they're being audited, and that bothers me. And also, if it's important to have, I mean, I could see this going two ways. You could either run it as it's just a report and the legislature does what it does, or you can do it as you can sunset and sort of force the legislature to reanalyze it. I just feel like we need to go one way or the other and treat them all a little more equally and not have the first years be subject to sunset, but then after that, you know, everything else is just sort of a report. So that's sort of my concern, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I guess there's it's a twofold answer, but it might not get exactly what you need. First, the biggest problem that we have with the construction of this bill was the fact is that we cannot tie the hands of future legislators. We can suggest, we can set up mechanisms, and the sunset provision is the only way that we can set in motion to get the future legislatures to act. That's why we have a sunset. That's why they are sunsetting, is to get them to do something. And the reason why the mechanism is in place is we felt, the sponsor felt comfortable because of the information out there with the current credits in Department of Revenue. There are no other major credits tracked by Department of Revenue except for the ones that I answered, the list that I provided, plus the ones that we're going to sunset. But when the review sets up, when the review is set up, we can't tell future legislators that review CCED and sunset these things, or, you know, repeal these things on the timeline without having additional information. We knew, because the amount of information out there for those specific credits, that future legislators could review and extend, or at least have the information to extend. But when it came to, like, if we review even the things that are going to be reviewed next year in Department of, excuse me, I've lost my place. Fish and Game, Health and Social Services, Labor, Workforce Development, the credits and the exemptions and the deductions, the things that are in there, the only thing we do have is that current record that you have from our ledge research, and we didn't feel that was there was enough information without verifying it through Department of Revenue actually collecting it instead of our ledge research people. So that's why we didn't. We knew we had plenty of information on the repeal, the sunset provisions on those credits, but not with the other ones. So there could be future legislators could introduce bills that would repeal, sunset, extend additional credits. We just didn't feel comfortable identifying those and making it happen this year.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to have to ponder that a bit. I'm not sure I'm quite there with you yet.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and look at in the 70s when the whole concept of sunsetting was implemented, how controversial that probably was, and how inimical I'm sure the prognosticated impacts were.
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chairman, my thought is if we're considering that the only way we're going to give teeth to this bill is to sunset things, only sunsetting a handful of them and not sunsetting the rest, just sort of, I guess I'm still struggling with that concept.
That's that whole process of legislative compromise, but that's why we have this process. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. I have similar concerns. The educational tax credit, for instance, has a 2021 sunset, but then would be targeted for an earlier repeal, given the time frame of the review, and that does concern me. Section 12, if you could explain the repeal of Section 12 and how it's reordered in the new bill for clarification, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Through the Chair, Representative Munoz, the old Section 12, the sunset provisions, which now became in the new bill, Section 10, the ones that we did eliminate, were all the ones that were referencing specifically the mineral exploration credits. So, you know, they were AS 2730010, 2730020, 2730025, 2730030, 2730040, 2730050, 2730060, 2730070, going all the way up through 99. I should have said that earlier. And then AS 43, 2044, and those were just the ones, all of the language that dealt with the mineral exploration credit. And that's Section 10 now.
So for all of If I may, if, all of the credits that remain for review are reviewed. If you could explain the cycle then every 2 years and if they...
why don't you go through and explain the six-year cycle, how they're broken up? I think that was kind of left off the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the timeline for the review cycles are Department of Revenue will, before every beginning of every new legislature, so every 2 years, Department of Revenue will produce a report for, let me just make sure it's every year, right? It's every 2 years.
Yeah.
So every 2 years, the Department of Revenue will create the expenditure report for all departments. That will then go to Ledge Finance, where Ledge Finance will then do their section of review, and then and their review, though, won't be all departments. Even though Department of Revenue does all report, all of them, Ledge Finance will only be responsible to do the cycle, which is 15, 17, 19, and then so those different departments will be reviewed during those cycles. And then after that initial first review, so after 19, and then all other foregone revenue after that, we'll set up a six-year cycle of review. And the reason why we had the six-year cycle of review is when we had fiscal notes run out for 5 years, and that's how we got to that six-year mark, is we kind of know what it's going to cost us for 5 years, but what happens after that? So that's where the six-year cycle. When it regards to the when it comes to the repealers, the repealer section, the sunset provision in Section 10 now is 2016 for those eight credits. And at that point, the 29th legislature can then establish a new sunset date, and there's no requirement on, we can't tell them how long to push that out. That would be up to the purview of the 29th legislature. So, you know, next year you could see a sunset bill introduced for the education tax credit that could go out 6 years. It could go out 1 year. It's that's where we can't bind the hands of future legislators by telling them how long those sunset dates can go. So that's how the mechanism works.
Was there confusion, Representative Holmes? Do you want to?
No, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm just confused about this whole binding future legislatures. I mean, I understand the concept that we can't tell people in the future you have to put a certain sunset on something, but at least for the first cycle, you can sunset things the first time around.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
We did. Our first set of sunsets were 2016, so they can be looked at in the 29th legislature, and then future provisions can extend those out.
So we could, Mr. Chairman, if I may, we could go partway to what I'm saying if you felt you had enough information and sunset everything for the first time. What you're saying is you can't tell future legislatures. You then have to sunset everything every 6 years.
That, through the chair,
okay.
Yes.
I guess I would be interested, Mr. Chairman, in working with them on whether or not we can sunset it, you know, whether we treat everything the same on the first round of reviews. I understand better now.
I did note a pensive look on your face. That's why I jumped.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I did indeed.
Representative Newman, and then Representative Guerra, and then others.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm on page four, sections four and five, and how the report is initially developed. And it speaks to recommendations that are done by Ledge Finance and an explanation of the methodology and assumptions. And my question is if we're going to be doing this, why aren't we creating the methodology and the assumptions that we tell Ledge Finance to use? As the legislature, I would think that would be our job, and we would script the methodology that is going to be used to make these assumptions in the bill before we pass the bill.
Through the chair, if you look at Section 8, I think we are telling them exactly what we want. We do go through in the name of the indirect expenditure, brief description of the indirect expenditure, statutory authority, the date the statute authority, indirect expenditure to be repealed if applicable, intent of the legislation, the public purpose, the estimated annual effect of the revenue on revenue, the estimated cost to administer the indirect expenditure, if applicable, the number of beneficiaries of the indirect expenditure, the purpose, you know, it goes through quite a list here. And I think that that's, is that what you're asking, Representative Newman? We're telling them what we want.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Thompson, again, is it asked for an explanation of the methodologies and assumption that they used in it. And although you script out some of the things that you're looking at, what it still says, if you look in the page prior on page 3, it allows revenue to do that. Every 2 years, Ledge Finance shall deliver to the chair a report analyzing those. And, you know, different reports, whether they're performance reports or financial reports on how they do them. I'd rather prefer to see some type of a methodology that we say this is what and how we want you to look at, because a lot of this talks about legislative intent. And it was mentioned by the co-chair, you know, the sunset that were put into effect in the 70s on looking at some of these and why that was done. I don't know what the legislative intent on each one of those was. You know, and it kind of pulls into Section 10 and the questions on that is we got a list of a whole bunch of sections here, but I don't know what those are. You know, I guess we could have my own staff go back and find all those and what they are, but I'd certainly like to see what they are before, you know, I move on a bill, if we could have, you know, see that in the bill. I don't know what all those are, and are we eliminating them before we get the report and have the chance to look at them and identify their need? Because the way I read this, you know, on a date specific, they're repealed. And so are they repealed before we've had the chance to even look at them completely?
Representative Newman, through the chair, we'll have 2 years to take a good review and take a look at what we're doing. We aren't repealing them before we look at them. We are actually required, and it's our responsibility as legislators to go back and review this report in depth, take a look. If we got questions, we can go back and find out, but we'll have a 2-year window to go back and do that to make sure that they continue if they're worthy. And Representative Stoltz,
the only thing I'm worried about is we make sure none of these get referred to the House Fisheries Committee.
Mr. Anderson. Mr. Chairman, I had a conversation with David Teal from Legislative Finance yesterday on that point of methodology and the assumptions and the mechanism, and I don't know if anybody is available online from Legislative Finance, but Mr. Teal did kind of walk me through some of the things that they would be considering that would then, you know, once they make their assumptions, then they would have, you know, the idea is to have that explanation at the end of the report. And
just to let folks know that there's not even a remote attempt to try to move this today. This was to put members' concerns. Previous was public testimony, and I have a lot of confidence in Representative Thompson working with members. I'm yielding him to continue to help develop a CS that this committee is comfortable with. So that's what this this roundtable is, to put a lot of the issues on the table. So, Representative Newman, did you have any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, a concern is Mr. Anderson, you mentioned it. Mr. Teal, the director of Ledge Finance, had discussions with you on how they would do this, but I don't know what those are. We don't know if Mr. Teal's going to be here in 2 or 3 years when those come back. You know, I would like to see something where we get to decide on the methodology and look at something that's a little more clear on what they look at, if it's financial performance, two different types of audits that are done in the budget process, how they look at these in the scope, and then how they would view legislative intent. I don't know how they would do that, but I'd certainly like an explanation or maybe something in a bill that kind of scripts that. If we're going to, I get the tent and I like the idea, but if there's a way to do that.
Representative Thompson has acknowledged that he'll look at that issue as we're looking at refinements. Do you have any other comments, sir?
We'll through the chair, Representative Newman, we'll work with you on that to try to get that explanation. We're telling them what we want, and they're the experts, not us, and I was hoping that they would be able to probably move forward and figure out what the process would be for them. So that's what we're trying to do. I mean, we're not finance people, you know, as far as that side of it. So I would think that they would have to work with us, I assume, to come up with a good methodology to where that it would be accurate, would be explainable, and that's what we're hoping for. I don't want to tell somebody with that high of a degree how to do their job, but we know what we are trying to get, and let them come up with how to make sure that it's accurate.
Thank you. Representative, did you have any follow-up, Representative Newman?
No, I understand that. I would just like to see what that is before we pass the bill.
I think there's certainly potential to work out a more clarified mechanism, but that's what the process is about. Representative Guerra, and then Edgman, and then Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During this testimony, I was able to scan through 32 different statutes that are being repealed. That's the part that concerns me. I understand that and like the part of the bill that says, let's see whether these credits are working, let's see how much they're costing us, and let's see whether we should go through with them. I think that's a smart thing to do. And that's what I thought the CS did, but then I came up to Section 10, and I realized that what it's also doing is repealing 32 separate credits. The first one's not a credit, it's actually an insurance tax. There are a number of fisheries tax credits that are disappearing. There are a few municipal, essentially, grants that are being repealed. I haven't had a chance to read those very closely. The film tax credit, the film tax programs are being eliminated by this bill.
And Representative Gary, I think you understand sunset, so but the soundbite time I understand, but this is an educational process.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually not trying to engage in soundbites. I'm trying to go through the bill.
Please, no, proceed.
So the whole film tax program would be eliminated in 2016 under this bill. And I'm only guessing, but all of these credits didn't pass in a year, didn't pass in 2 years. And the idea that, you know, if we like these credits, we'll just reinstate them next session. You can't pass this many credits in one session. There are too many roadblocks in the system. Too many committees where these things can get stopped. Too many places where these things can get slowed down so they can't get passed. So if there are good ones here, this whole idea of a two-year sunset and don't worry, we'll be able to reenact them in the next 2 years, I don't think works. I think the best way to do it is to analyze each of these tax provisions and see if they work. Like Representative Newman says, we're getting rid of the credits before we've done an analysis of them. And I have no doubt that some of these probably should disappear. I don't know how many of them, but right now I'm looking at 32, and we've had no testimony on what these 32 are, other than the film tax credit, which we debated the other day. So I've got a problem with Section 10, because the way a sunset works, there are easy sunsets to extend, and those are like boards and commissions. We talked about that the other day. But substantial tax credits, and one is an actual tax, and municipal rebates, substantial things like that, you know, if there are 20 of these that we think are okay, they're not going to get passed in one legislative session. So I would be more comfortable requiring a report so we are educated on which ones we want to keep, which ones we don't. As a backup, I'd be more comfortable if we had a full analysis of what we know about these existing tax credits that we're eliminating. But just getting rid of 32 of them that span from, I think there are some salmon value-added credits. I haven't gone through all of the fisheries credits. There are certainly all of the education credits that are in here. I don't think Section 10 and Section 11 are the way to go. The rest of the bill that says, let's find out whether these are costing the state too much money, whether they're worth it on balance, I think is a really good idea. But a wholesale vote on 32 other statutes that we're not discussing here, I have trouble with.
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, that's why we are asking for an in-depth analysis so that we will have that work done. We can review and see what exactly we have done and if it's effective or not, and they come back and give us their recommendation that we should continue this or we shouldn't. We'll have the backup and the in-depth analysis of each one of these. By putting this sunset on for 2 years so that it will force the legislature to do their job, to go back and take a look, to make sure that we're doing the right thing for the state of Alaska and for its people. If we don't have that in there, it'll be just another report we get and put over in the side and don't do anything with. This forces the legislature to do their job and take a look at that in-depth analysis and make sure that we're doing the right thing for Alaska.
I think that just something else ought to be clarified on the record is tax credits are diverted general fund revenues, and that is our ongoing discussion here as we're facing that said. I just want to make sure tax credits, they get labeled as something that doesn't seem like real money, and this focuses that it is general fund money that's just being diverted before the process started, everything should be a part of our discussion as we're having the hard decisions. But
just to follow up,
Representative Guerra.
Yeah, maybe a less regal way to do it, but would be to, and I don't mind. You know, I'll spend the extra time. That's what I was hired for these full $50,000 a year to do. I'll work late, but I think we have to have testimony from interested parties and those who understand all of these tax credits before we eliminate them. So that would be another way to do it, would be to go through each one of these at this point and decide whether or not we want to include them. But just eliminating them and thinking we can get them reenacted after the report comes in within one legislative term.
I think the beneficiaries clearly understand the implications, and that's why they've been working the halls.
Well, I haven't heard from them, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to hear from them in committee.
That's why we've had 2 days of public testimony. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To clarify, according to the revenue source book, the fall 2013, Representative Garrick mentioned 32 statute, there's only 8 credits, now 7 credits, that are actually in Section 10. The way Department of Revenue classifies the credit is there's one credit that reaches into multiple tax components, and every single time it reaches into another tax component, it gets its own statutory reference. But so like the education tax credit reaches into 8 major tax components, and so there's actually only now 7 tax credits that we are sunsetting.
Representative Edgman, Costello, Guttenberg, and then Osterman, Guttenberg, Osterman, and then Wilson.
Thank you.
Just to let people know where they're in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate giving us this opportunity to learn more about the bill here. And I missed a hearing on this. I think it was the first hearing of the bill. So very openly, I'm in catch-up mode here. That the more I hear about the bill, the more I'm recognizing that there are some sweeping impacts of this legislation. I appreciate the underlying intent, and it's an intent that I certainly support. The specific question I'd have would be on Section 6, though, and that would be involving unincorporated communities. The process involving unincorporated communities and lapsing grants, as I understand it today, is that the with the Division of Community Regional Affairs, when you get to 7 months out before a grant would actually lapse, the unincorporated community is contacted, and there's a process in place. There's like 4 requirements that have to be met in order to substantiate the extension of that grant that's about to lapse. So I guess the first question would be, was there a specific reason to put the Section 6 in the bill, knowing that there's a process in place? And then maybe a better question for Mr. Ruby, if and when we get to that point, Mr. Co-Chair, would be to ask, would that, if Section 6 were to go forward, would that require new regulations and maybe the construction of a new process involving unincorporated communities?
Mr. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Edgman, at the present time, incorporated municipalities and cities have a five-year sunset on a grant. Unincorporated communities, named recipients, actually in statute don't have any sunset date on a grant. Regional Affairs has been going forward as though that they're the same as the others with the 5 years and then getting a hold of them. And my staff, Brody Anderson, has spoke with these people, realized what is being done at the present time, and he can explain that a little bit.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Edgman, I spoke with Scott Ruby, and I believe Mr. Ruby was going to be available to answer, but he sent an email that in the document that was distributed yesterday for all the committee members, there was specifically, he addressed that point, and currently under statute AS 3705318, that actually prohibits the department from enacting regulations with regards to the administration of grants appropriated under 3705.315-17, which is these two sections of named recipients and unincorporated communities. They can't do regulation changes unless they get statutory authority to do it. So what they've been doing for the grants is treating them like the municipalities, and that's the system that they set up with the lapsing grants system was made for the municipalities, and then for better, I believe he used the term, and we can ask him, a good business practice, because the responsibility of public funds, they pushed that system onto named recipients and unincorporated communities just as a way to manage all the public funds. This will finally give them the authority to actually have statutory authority to do exactly what they're currently doing, and I believe Mr. Ruby will speak to that as well.
Today we have only about a little under 15 minutes left, and we have four more people.
Well, can I just make a quick point?
But yeah, we'll come back to Mr. Ruby.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm not lying on the railroad tracks on this one at this point or not, but I just want to flag it because these are smaller communities with high turnover at the municipal at the leadership level, unincorporated communities, and so I want to make sure that with intent to equalize things with larger incorporated communities, that we don't somehow disenfranchise these smaller communities along the way.
Thank you, Representative Costello, Guttenberg, Osterman, and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. How many other states handle their tax credit programs in this manner?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I don't have an exact number, but I can go back and look it up. Most of the work that we did prior to the introduction of this bill was with the NCSL and the Pew Center and a lot of states. I know right now there's at least 12 states that were working on some sort of indirect expending reporting and control mechanisms to set in place for reining in indirect expenditures, but I can get you a full list from those two sources.
I appreciate the transparency portion of the legislation, but what concerns me is that the legislature always has the authority to introduce a sunset bill, and I was wondering what values you are weighing when the decision was made to actually put some teeth into this and go beyond the information and transparency portion into the portion of the bill that would have sunset implications for these programs.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I believe the main point that kind of drove the fact of trying to start sunsetting some of these credits was the fact that when we got the legislative research report, in those seven credits or eight credits It's about $120 million over a five-year span. And that's $120 million of lost revenue that the state could have had. And to look at the fact that some of these have sunset dates that extend far beyond the amount of money available, or the potential that we'll run out of money before the sunset hits, or also the fact of the scope of a tax credit that has now reached into eight major tax components and goes out, and then the benefit to the state of that far-reaching grab of credits available versus the benefit to the state, and trying to set that point of at some point providing that mechanism to a stopgap almost, and like putting the cycle, putting, like you say, the teeth into it. So that was the money, I believe, the funds available, and evaluating the funds available and actually giving it some depth was the decision. I'm looking
through the chair. Yeah, I have no problem with the transparency section of it. Has there been any analysis on the impact on the investment decisions and dollars if a sunset is looming out in the future?
Through the chair, besides not beyond the testimony or the lobbying efforts of the different groups that have come through and spoke about the impact, the report that would be provided next year will actually have an official analysis from Ledge Finance. But no, at this point, it's just the testimony of the people that that have spoken up saying, hey, we are doing this, or this could impact us. So at this point, no.
My final comment. Isn't your action of putting some in a category of having a sunset and others not a recognition of that impact?
Through the chair, I thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Costello.
Above Brody's pay grade there.
Yeah. No, actually, we didn't take all of that into consideration. It's something that is going to be discussed, I'm sure, in the next couple of days in the hallways and in our offices by visits from different lobbyists and groups that are concerned about that. And it's something we probably need to take into consideration. But if we work and do our job early on in 2015, it'll belay those fears, and we can get things renewed, because we'll have that report to be able to move forward and make sure that we don't do something or delay something that would have an effect on certain tax credits.
Thank you.
I just add on the record, I don't go to a lot of conferences. I went to one on fiscal policy in 2010, and I was pretty overwhelmed sitting in a room with state comptrollers, state treasurers, seasoned ways and means, and finance chairmen. And to a person, they said if they'd go back and do one thing differently and re-examine differently, it was how they didn't treat tax credits as real money. And that really stuck. And I have to say, going to that NCSL conference, that 30, 40 minutes of that left a bigger impression, obviously, supporting Representative Thompson's bill. It was very sobering to see folks that have been doing budgets a lot longer and the states with a lot more history. They said, well, if we could go back and do things differently, we would treat tax credits as if they were real dollars. And that was universal. But back on schedule, we have Representative Osterman, Representative Wilson Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm having a hard time with the bill based upon my initial conversation or discussion about the inequity of how we're looking at these tax credits. And Mr. Anderson, you said last 5 years we had $110 or $120 million worth of tax credits that have lost revenue to the state, basically is what you're saying. But the same token, we've had over $2 billion worth of tax credits in the non-renewable resource extraction industry in the state of Alaska. And if we don't want to treat them basically the same that we're treating the rest of them, then I think I'm going to have a problem with the bill. I don't. I totally agree with the concept, as several members here have said. I think that the discussion needs to be more relevant, though, to what the overall tax credits are that we're losing in the state, if you want to call it losing or giving up or whatever you want to call it, rather than just narrowing in on the on these tax credits. My other question deals with why, instead of going to Section 10, where you do it all at 1 year on the repeal, that a lot of these have got sunset dates on them already, why we haven't taken the structure of, all right, we want to take a hard look at each one of these tax credits. That's fine. We already have sunset dates on them. And when they come up, they will have that review. And I totally agree that we probably need to really tighten up what that review is. What is the cost-benefit ratio to the state? We don't necessarily do that in the current structure that we're under, and I agree that we need to change and do that. But we have those sunset dates coming up. We can do that on the sunset date that they come up. And then why are we included all the ones that have sunset dates on them with the ones that don't have sunset dates? I mean, I can understand if you brought a bill forward that had all the tax credits and all the taxes that you're concerned about that don't have sunset dates on them, that would be one thing. But to include everything that's already got a sunset date on it that could come back on a constant basis, that would have the structure already in place that you're looking for and do it at that point in time. So those are the concerns that I still have in reference to the bill, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, I suspect had there been this structure in place, we might have had different discussions on sunset dates. But that's all committee discussion.
Yeah, and you know, and when we talk about this, we talk about the non-renewable. I mean, you can go to Cook Inlet right now. And basically, they have a zero tax rate in Cook Inlet on gas and oil under because of the heavy tax credits that they get plus the low tax rate that they have. So it becomes more concerned to me as we go through the process of how what the equity issue is.
Through the chair, Representative Osterman, we decided that we didn't want to delve into oil and gas credits. That's been thoroughly vetted for the last several years, and if we brought that in, it would take 3 years to get this bill passed. We really felt that that's probably subject for future legislatures or legislation to address those. All kinds of well, there's an initiative coming up in August and deals with that also. So it's an item in an area that we decided to stay away from was explorations and gas and oil. So as far as picking the ones we did, it's because they deal with only seven or eight tax credits. I mean, so we felt like that would be doable by the legislature, the 29th legislature. They would be able to take care of this, get the thorough analysis, and be able to do their job and to do it thoroughly and represent that we are doing the proper thing with what we're doing.
Follow up then,
Ms. Osterman.
How, in reading the bill, I don't see the true structure of what the questions are going to be asked to get to that cost-benefit ratio that I'm thinking about of each one of these credits, and who makes that determination? Is it the departments are going to bring forward the actual numbers and stuff like that, Ledge Finances, if I understand, and what set criteria do they use so that we know that we have the information that we need?
We have set the criteria and asked Ledge Finance to come back with their recommendation. What benefit is it actually for Alaska, and are we getting that benefit that it was intended?
I think Representative Newman presented that too, and I think there was an expressed commitment to try to work on instituting a mechanism. So we got a lot of work to do in this.
When this comes back, maybe Ledge Finance could be here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is serving a purpose of letting us know, Representative Thompson, know where we need to redirect focus and use every one of our remaining 39, 40 days wisely. Representative Wilson and then Guttenberg and much as we can get done. And a lot of us have bills on the floor, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quick, and Representative Osterman said quite a bit of what I was thinking. But I guess there's two things here going on. You have those that are already sunsetting, those that don't. So you kind of have that division to start with. But I think it really is a mechanism for all tax credits, because as soon as we start taking out a few, and then we take out a few more, I mean, of course people are going to lobby, because right now they're getting funds that probably aren't checked as well as they should, which again comes back to us, because we should be doing that. But I think the more we take out, it's going to be hard to justify the ones that we left. But I guess I see this bill as being two parts. First of all, what do we do with the ones that aren't sunset? Because then they don't get any kind of look at whatsoever. And then if we're looking at the ones that do sunset, maybe the process, no matter what field it's in, is everybody's going to kind of have the same type of check. So there's that fairness that goes, and actually something that we should have been doing if we're not doing already, because we have to do this. I mean, we all just went through budget cuts that we're going to have to go through even more severe ones next year. And this is, as Co-Chair said, Stoltz said, that this is money that would have been coming into the coffers otherwise. And so we definitely need to do business different. But I guess I see it as a division of two things, and maybe if we hit it that direction, it'll make it more clear for everybody else. But we definitely need to do, and I thank you for taking this on. It's a huge task.
Closing things on the table, Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Sections 5 and 6 on page 4 and 5, grants to named recipients and unincorporated municipalities. So theoretically, when this passes, those named recipients and those unincorporated communities that have outstanding grants more than 5 years, they don't have an opportunity to apply for a reapprop or an extension. Often in rural Alaska, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, they would. I mean, they would be treated the same as a municipality or a borough. They would have to come back, justify why they hadn't done anything with that grant, and get it reappropriated. That's what the purpose of this is to make sure that they do come, you know, that they do have that, where that they come back and say, the reason we haven't started this project is because we changed our entire village leadership, and we are in the process now of going forward, and the next year or the year after is when this construction project is actually going to happen. And so it would be the same reappropriation process that we do now for
which could include organized extensions.
Yes, I just don't see, thank you, Mr. Chair, I just don't see that in here.
That's how the process works here.
Mr. Chairman,
this would be the review portion.
If I may, referring back to the same document that was provided, the final four pages are the current process in which the department handles the lapsing, and they do address the fact as whether or not the community gets to, if they haven't done the work, how they have to explain it, and then whether or not it's approved or not. And then if it's, you know, if for some reason, you know, it's not approved, then it would, for the extension, then it would appear in the current lapsing grant list that
process.
So if you could just direct me to that statute where it allows them to do that, because it's not in there now. It's not in that section.
It's not in that. That's through the chair, Representative Gutenberg. I believe that's that mechanism is controlled at a regulation level and not in the statute level. Same with the municipalities. It's not, you know, if you look at the statute for the municipalities, that language isn't in there either.
Okay. But you said earlier they weren't allowed to exceed their authority. That's not in statute. So we'll just have this conversation. Thank you.
And I would view this and be treated like all other reappropriations.
I hope so.
Whether it be an extension, but it does cause the look at it and review, which I think is a good thing for all of them, whether municipal or non. I'm going to remove my objection to the CS so we have a document to work from. Is there any other maintained objections so we have this working document? So the CS is adopted, and now we have at least have something to work off of. Representative Thompson, you've heard the questions, and we will plod forward, and I think our staff have taken notes of everything, and I've certainly taken all my mental notes. So that we
we will come back and work on it. I don't have an expectation with our workload on the floor. And we'll try to come back and do it this afternoon, but we'll leave that open to whether or not we're here, able to be here or not. So,
do you have anything else, Mr. Co-Chair? On to the floor. We're here.